Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
This is how history went after McCoy changed it. Here. In the late 1930s, a growing pacifist movement whose influence delayed the United States' entry into the Second World War. While peace negotiations dragged on, Germany had time to complete its heavy water experiments.
Germany. Fascism. Hitler. Won the Second World War.
Because all this lets them develop the A-bomb first. There's no mistake, Captain. Let me run it again. Edith Keeler, founder of the peace movement.
But she was right. Peace was the way.
She was right, but at the wrong time. With the A-bomb and with their V-2 rockets to carry them, Germany captured the world.
No.
And all this because McCoy came back and somehow kept her from dying in a street accident as she was meant to. We must stop him, Jim.
Okay, ready to start?
I suppose.
Okay, let me... Hold on. Okay, we're starting now because...
Starting.
We know this because
I... We know this.
I pushed the little timer button.
I see the numbers go.
This is a Linux system.
On I the know big this. Radio clock.
I know this.
Oh, no. Are you doing quotes from Jurassic Park now?
Yeah. I don't know if I got it perfectly right.
I think you should save that till episode 300 because, you know, at the hundreds, we're on episode 276.
Shit.
I'll tell you which podcast in just a moment, but we're on episode 276 of that podcast. And normally when we get to a hundo, when we arrive at
every,
a new century, we tweak the format a little bit. We added breaks
sometimes
at one point.
Sometimes we change the music.
We added sound effects somewhere.
Well, the sound effects didn't happen during 100. That just kind of happened one day.
But we still.
Like the title
we changed
theme.
We changed the theme song a little bit.
I think that happened when I got a new laptop. And I didn't even need to have a new laptop to do it. Although originally I pulled my sounds onto my new laptop and then I started using an iPad instead.
Chief O'Brien.
It's a long way about me saying maybe hold off on the Jurassic Park stuff until episode 300, and we'll stop referencing Spaceballs and Pulp Fiction and start referencing like
no way, dude.
Jurassic Park and I don't know what like
oh that'll be our
Total Recall or something or
Total
Empty Nest.
Empty Nest.
what show or movies should we start referencing in lieu of Pulp Fiction and Spaceballs?
UHF.
Well, yeah, UHF would be good.
And then maybe we could.
We've referenced other shows too. So.
Nope, we've only referenced Pulp Fiction and Spaceballs.
We've done some Arrested Development.
Oh yeah, and a few Arrested Development.
What was that movie?
King of the Hill. We've talked about
Saint Elmo's Fire. Elmo's Fire.
I refuse to reference anything from Saint Elmo's Fire.
Why?
They did not light a fire in my heart, Dan.
Oh man. But what's his name? Joe Lawrence, Joey Lawrence. No, that was a Karate Kid guy. That was the bad guy in Karate Kid. Well, but bad is a relative term.
All right, how about
especially
this?
If you watch the newer show, which I enjoy. Rob Lowe. He's a saxophone player, I think.
Rob Lowe.
That's
yeah.
right.
He's like one of them rockin' saxophone players, but they're just sounding like some like 80s cheese. But it's like
he has a crazy like
they're like
hairstyle.
They're like up there playing some crazy cheese 80s sax, but it's supposed to be like the coolest shit ever. But it's really like pretty lame.
It was pretty lame.
Okay, so we've circled around
the movie's irritating.
Circled around the topic here.
Okay, what about what's the other one that also had that Brat Pack or whatever Marcy's dog pound.
Okay,
I don't know what you're saying.
You guys can continue this conversation.
This sounds like conversation for another time.
I'm gonna get back to the business at hand, which is to explain that this is the 276th episode of the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
You! What planet is this?
So, there is, therefore, an implicit expectation by our audience, no doubt, that we will be discussing Star Trek.
Right, not Pulp Fiction.
Let me be your gateway.
Okay, good. Good. Thank you. All right.
Thank you for what?
For playing the cool sounds are from the Star Trek episode that we watched.
Yeah. Where are we? Earth.
It was appropriate.
Where we are is at the introduction of our discussion of The City on the Edge of Forever.
Yeah.
From Star Trek.
Okay, good.
From
Star
Trek, the original series. Now,
I watched them.
First, to provide some context to listeners, particularly future listeners, those listeners somewhere down the line, down the time stream, who are listening to this episode, perhaps
16 candles. That was one of those
plucked out of order.
16 candles
from the rest of them.
That one's all right.
Last week, we had the honor and fortune, I won't say good or otherwise, but the fortune to watch and discuss Star Trek Section 31.
Yeah. Strangely compelling, isn't it?
Now, there's a connection, I would say, with this episode.
There is a connection.
Well, so saith my algorithm.
But yes, we were we were so delighted when Dan's algorithm selected for us to follow our discussion of Section 31. We got to discuss one of the classicist.
Classicist. It was a classist episode.
The classiest, the most classicist, episodes of Star Trek ever. The City on the Edge of Forever.
Yeah, one of my faves.
Very,
very good. Incredible power.
I'd have to say.
It is one of my favorites. It's a lot of people's favorites. It's one of the most famous episodes of Star Trek ever.
Yeah.
And it also has, I mean, maybe this contributes to that fact. It's one of, I think, the most well-written, most well-constructed, very, very well-performed
episodes. It's got that lady in it.
Of Star Trek generally, not just TOS, but Star Trek generally, yes.
If you're a bum, if you can't break off with a booze or whatever it is that makes you a bad risk, then get out.
We don't want you on our podcast.
Oh, that's what you were trying to get. I was like,
can't break off with the booze.
Sometimes it takes me a second to interpret.
Well, he mentioned her name, and so I found a clip. And that
I didn't mention
it. That seemed
I just said that later.
Well, you know, you mentioned, you know.
Anyway,
there is no alternative.
The long and the short of it is a bit of a cognitive dissonance to go from discussing Section 31, which was a hot mess.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't hate it. I didn't hate Section
31. I would say there is something incredible. There's something incredible about that movie.
It was interesting to watch. And I got more enjoyment watching that than Nemesis or that Voyager episode, Tattoo.
I was saying there was something incredible about that episode, about that movie, and I don't think it was in a good way, but there was something is amazing about that it exists nonetheless.
It's interesting.
And I don't, but
it's
I don't,
an interesting
but
experience.
Like I said, I don't mean that necessarily, I don't mean that in like a positive way, but
and
it
if
is,
you, if
it
you
did
haven't
stand
listened,
out.
It happened.
If you haven't
it
listened
happened.
To our discussion, go back and check it out. Dan actually nearly has a legitimate nervous breakdown.
Unbelievable, Captain.
Early on, he had to get calmed down a little bit.
It's tricky stuff.
But anyway, all that is a long way of saying it's now nice that we get to discuss this episode. It's a very good episode.
Very good one.
Everyone's going to
behold.
Enjoy. We got all sorts of good
behold.
Sound effects.
That's a good one.
Good sound clips. Mm-hmm. So, with that being said,
security alert.
Do we have news on that?
Alert! Alert!
Oh no, no! I should have mentioned no emails or anything like this that this week. But if
that's
you wanna...
what we should use when we have emails, I should play this.
Alert! Alert!
Here's now. We got an email.
Wait.
Alert! Alert!
Could you try that again?
Now, everybody, we got an email.
Alert! Alert!
Or no, I should say like now, everybody.
Alert!
Hey.
Alert!
We got an email. Hey, everybody.
Alert! Alert!
We got an email.
Did you say everyone?
Hey, everyone.
Alert! Alert!
We got an email.
Okay. This is all very well and good, except for the fact that this week we do not have an email.
Alert! Alert!
But I'll let you know ahead of time if we do have an email next week. And
suddenly it went dead.
One way we might get an email is if people send us an email at what is it? Feedback.
I don't know.
It's feedback at itsgotstartrek.
Lots of people drink from the wrong bottle sometimes.
.com. Feedback at itsgotstartrek.com. I definitely drank from the wrong bottle this evening.
We have no way of knowing if the madness is permanent.
So, yes, feedback at itsgotstartrek.com. Or if you want to leave a voicemail, itsgotstartrek.com/record.
Record.
You can find all that at the website. But anyway, that's if you want to write in for whatever reason you might have. You have questions about, have you? Or comments about this week's episode or about the topic of next week's episode, which we'll tell you later.
Speculation.
You can do it
there. Get inside.
But otherwise, I think there's a lot to discuss in this episode, so
let's get to it.
Jump right in there.
All right.
The first question I have is about the title, The City on the Edge of Forever. It's a cool title.
Kind of.
Right there. Yeah. You're starting off really great.
Kind of cool.
The title is cool. It's evocative. What do you think it means?
Eternity.
Okay, eternity could be something.
Well, I mean, it's the city that, like,
City on the Edge of Forever.
Well, the Edge of Forever is like what the Guardian guards.
Are you talking about like an actual city?
Well,
I'm explaining what my opinion is.
No, I'm sorry. I'm asking.
He's clarifying the question.
But you can go ahead.
All right.
Merely asking for what your interpretation is. There are multiple interpretations on the internet. The producers have said some things. Other people have said other things. It's like poetry. It's like an English class. You've got to interpret the title.
So you have the Guardian of Forever.
Yeah.
And then
I get that.
The Guardian of Forever guards forever. Beyond the edge of that forever is the city that they are in. They're in the city.
Those ruins?
The city. No, not the ruins. The city.
The city of New York?
No. The city on the edge of forever is what the Guardian guards. The Guardian guards the edge. And the city is on the edge of forever.
So it's not the ruins in your book?
Oh, wait. Maybe it is the ruins.
Wait a minute.
Jesse was asking if it's the ruins.
He threw me off because I was like... I was in the middle of formulating.
So you mean the ruins that are around the Guardian?
That's where the Guardian is.
This is why I get confused.
This is even quicker than last time.
It's just... Okay.
All right.
10 minutes.
You both are like, you mean this? I'm like,
So start with the Guardian of Time or Forever. Jesus. Guardian Forever.
So much effort. So the Guardian... There's the Guardian... of forever.
Okay.
And then there's the edge. Like the Guardian is on the edge of forever because that's where you guard forever. And the city is on the edge of forever. Originally I thought it was everything. Well, you know, I think no, it's not the ruins. It could be the ruins. But it could also be the city could just be some kind of metaphorical city of like endless time.
Like the city of God.
Like the endless time. Like the edge, when you go past the Guardian, past the edge, you go into forever, the city of forever, which is all of existence.
Indeed.
Including space and time. You see what I'm saying?
Right. The universe is the city of forever.
Yeah. And the ability to jump through time like that, that's the real forever. Like, not just three-dimensionally.
The forever forever?
Not just three-dimensionally, but also four-dimensionally.
I agree. I think those are plausible interpretations.
People, control circuit threatening to overload, Captain.
People online have said it is the ruins.
The ruins?
Or New York City, or both.
No, it's neither. Well, I mean, it could be the ruins, but I'm saying it's
more... It could also be New York City,
but I'm saying
it's on the edge of forever.
No, but I'm saying it's not a literal city. It's the metaphorical city that is represented by all of space and time.
I like metaphorical cities as well.
I was reading that the writing people said they wanted runes, as in R-U-N.
Not runes?
Like runic symbols.
Mm-hmm.
And the like the art... The art people were like misheard that, misunderstood it, and said they made ruins.
You know, those ruins were supposed to...
Runes. Give us some runes.
Did you make that up?
No, I didn't. I read that.
You made that up.
No, I did not make that up.
Those ruins, they were talking about how they went on
Does
to
Does that
the...
sound like trickery?
It sounded like some trickery. Those ruins, like, were going on... Supposedly, they went on...
It's tricky stuff.
Explain. Explain this trick.
Assassins.
Assassins!
Assassins! Murderers! Assassins! Murderers! Killers! Assassins! Murderers! Killers! 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 Assassins!
People are going to love the high-end
I know.
Vibes of that audio stream.
But I think it was Bones that was saying that the...
Bones.
That was... Thank you for that. Thank you, Jesse.
I'm just glad to have Jesse back.
Thank you for that punctuation. I appreciate it. I think it was Bones who said that the ruins looked like they went onto the horizon, or they did go onto the horizon. Maybe that was Kirk.
I think it was Kirk.
Maybe it's Kirk.
Kirk.
But
which I thought was funny because it was a good way to be in your imagination. You're like, oh, they must go onto the horizon when they've only got a few little chunks of styrofoam.
Well, that's what I was going to say is that the horizon didn't seem to extend that far. Yeah. But like, I like the idea. You pretty much said what I was apologize.
I didn't mean to jump in there and steal the punchline to your little joke.
No, it's fine.
Your little joke.
Your little joke.
Your little joke.
Well,
get this thing fixed.
Speaking about the writers, before we get into all the plot.
It's that dude.
I think most people listening are probably familiar with the backstory to this episode. Written, or we should say the original draft was written by Harlan Ellison.
Right.
Gene Roddenberry at the time, he was trying to get prominent sci-fi authors to submit scripts, you know, to participate in Star Trek, to give it more credibility, to elevate it above what was at that time sort of the not taken very seriously, sort of childish sci-fi fare. Not necessarily
quite
bad,
barbaric,
but it was considered, you know, not to be taken seriously. And he figured by getting some of these high-end writers like Harlan Ellison, he could do that.
It seems impossible.
And it turned out it was, because Harlan Ellison's story had all sorts of craziness. It had a lieutenant selling drugs on the Enterprise.
Yeah.
It had one of his users was, or somebody was going to tattle on him. And so
the zinc-plated vacuum tube culture.
So he was going to get in trouble for selling drugs on the Enterprise. So he murders this other guy. He gets caught for it and was going to be put to death, you know, like struck.
Suddenly it went dead.
Whoa.
And so instead of McCoy going through the portal, it was going to be them chasing after this guy. And Ellison also had all sorts of other like weird characterization. He didn't really understand like the Kirk Spock thing. There wasn't a Guardian of Forever. There was like an alien race called the Guardians and these other.
Very strange.
I think his script called for like 1,000 extras or some shit. He was like trying to do something.
Control
like
target threatening to overload, Captain.
Ben Hur type business.
He was fucking with those guys, man.
Well, I think he wanted there to be a good story, but he butted heads with Roddenberry. And the long and the short of it is DC Fontana did a. The majority of lots of people worked on this script. DC Fontana, by all accounts, again uncredited, did the main rewrite, and then Roddenberry did some tweaks to what we get on the air. So. Not much survives from the original Harlan Ellison.
Well,
it's script.
It's kind of interesting to try to figure out which parts were from the original script and which were from like, you know, Gene Roddenberry. I imagine the whole Cordrazine like setup was probably not in the original.
Well, the original it was that drug dealer guy, and so instead.
So Cordrazine,
some other thing.
Cordrazine is some kind of Starfleet amphetamine, basically.
Because it's not a real thing. You usually look up the drugs. This is not a real drug.
Right? It's not real. Yeah, it's some kind of. I'm assuming it's amphetamine. It's supposed to deal with like when you have a heart condition,
like his heart palpitation, like Sulu.
Yeah.
It's I actually had this.
It's just a few drops.
Sulu enjoyed that Cordrazine.
Totally.
Yeah.
Did you see that when?
He was made anew.
He was all twitchy and weird.
Well, I thought I had written down what Cordrazine was, but I know it's supposed to boost your heart. It's supposed to do something by speeding up your heart. I think
that was a little clumsy, maybe, with like...
It was a strong...
McCoy should have been a little bit more careful with the hypospray on the bridge. I'm just going to bust on the bridge like and not... Watch it.
Memory Alpha says it was used to stimulate the heart during cardiac arrest. So it's probably some kind of amphetamine.
Now, does Memory Alpha say if it was mentioned in any other Star Trek episodes?
But it says City on the Edge of Forever. But it had, by the 24th century, it had become ubiquitous and was being used by physicians in much higher doses than in Kirk's day. Then it says TNG DS9 Voy. So I'm assuming.
I think. I definitely remember Crusher.
Oh, yeah. And then it lists a bunch of. There's a bunch of. It doesn't,
some
it doesn't list the episodes in order, but it shows up integrated within the prose. Is the various episodes referring to, like Tapestry, The Man of the People, Parturition.
Oh, yeah, we did Parturition.
Flashback.
That's about that weird lizard baby.
It gets referenced a whole shitload. So basically, we have to believe it's some kind of amphetamine because he went crazy with hallucinations.
He
went insane. It was kind of ridiculous. It didn't make sense.
And he got spots.
So they were pretty, like, you know, cavalier with this concept of traveling through time to prevent McCoy from getting sick. But then when they went back to 20th century, 1930, like, all he had to do was get a little bed rest in Edith Keeler's, like, hospital bed, and he got better. So if all it took was for him to lay in bed at in Edith Keeler's... missionary hospital thing place. If that's all it took for him to get better,
the 21st Street Mission.
Yeah, the 21st Street is it. Yeah, the 21st Street Mission. If that's all it took for him to get better, why was Kirk and them like contemplating traveling through fucking time to heal what essentially amounted to as an overdose that's going to pass in a few hours?
I didn't interpret it that way. I interpreted them as wanting to prevent, not just for McCoy's sake, but just for like just preventing the. the thing in the first place. But I do agree with you. It's a little confusing because McCoy seems to make a full recovery without any actual medical intervention beyond what you said, a nice, you know, a cup of coffee and a nice cot to sleep in. When the accident happened, everyone was like, we have no fucking clue what's going to happen. Right? You already played the clip of them saying, like, we don't know if the madness will last forever or not. So I don't know if that's a function of, like, them not having any other doctors on the Enterprise at this moment and to explain, like, no, he'll be fine in a bit. Or if they were just like, no record of somebody having that much cortisone put into them. And so they literally had no idea.
Well, so here's the line they were talking about. Kirk said, if that is a doorway back through time, could we somehow take Bones back a day in time? Then ... Spock says, relive the accident. This time, be certain that the hypo accident is avoided. So that's specifically saying, let's go back in time to prevent him from getting fucking shot with that hypo spray.
He's a time criminal.
Instead of just waiting a few hours for it to go away on its own.
No, but again, you're close. For some reason, you're assuming that that's related to helping McCoy as opposed to just...
It says it right here. It says, this time be certain that the hypo accident is avoided.
Yes, because after the hypo accident, McCoy traveled back in time. So, like, wouldn't it be better to have him never travel back in time?
No, this was before he traveled back in time. This is when they're in front of the gate, I think.
It was, like, right before he appeared. They were contemplating.
Oh, you know, you're right.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And then he all busted in. And
then,
was like,
I fall back on my previous argument.
I was not strangely making an association in my mind, as you implied or explied.
No, I was just...
You explied that I did that.
I did explain that. No, because I do apologize for getting the order of events incorrect, because, again, I'm falling back on the thing that...
Apologize, explain.
He knows, Doctor.
He knows.
He knows.
He totally does.
Yes. Anyway, all right.
My whole point, sum up, why it would seem like kind of a drastic move to go travel through time to heal his shit.
Did you say Jurassic move?
Oh my God!
No, Jesse, not until episode 300, please.
Jesus!
We already agreed.
You were like, you didn't even make a comment that I can talk over. You kept being like, hey Dan, answer my question, Dan, as I'm talking. Like, it wasn't even like boop or doop or doop as I talk. It's like, Dan, stop what you're talking right now and answer this non-question I have. I need you to acknowledge it right when you're in the middle of this sentence.
That's not what I did.
Okay. I said, and we were still talking about this. We could have been done with this subject, but I insist.
I understand, Dan.
I thought it was a drastic maneuver to travel through time to fix an ailment that would have resolved itself on its own in a few hours. The only explanation I'll give is, Patrick, you said perhaps he's like the only doctor and they just can't deal with it. But I don't know.
Or they just don't know. That's the impression that's how I interpreted it as.
That's all I can think it must be.
Okay, good. Well, we've,
now we can move on.
We've very clumsily resolved that issue. Thank you.
Behold.
Thank you, audience, for bearing with us.
Modern museum perfection.
Okay. So they fly to this planet. And here, by the way, we complained a little bit last week about the exposition in Section 31, the clumsy exposition.
Clumsposition.
This week, we have an example of some not-so-clumsy exposition, some elegant exposition, totally. Because we open on the Enterprise wobbling, and they're shaking back and forth, and they're all like, what's going on?
That was pretty cool.
And they had a classic console explosion. It's like they need to install some circuit breakers in those things, man. Yeah.
But the
way... It
was
good, like, bridge scene action.
They get the audience enraptured by what's going on here. They're talking about time waves, there's the explosion stuff.
It seems to be pulsating with power.
So we're interested in what's going on, but we don't know. We're like, whoa, what happened? How'd they get here? And then Kirk is like, hey, as a precaution, I'm going to send my logs to Starfleet. You know what I mean.
Is he going to flush
them? I'm going to send my logs to Starfleet in the event that the Enterprise, he was implying that, you know,
you made a play out of our logs?
If the Enterprise is blown up,
Your logs.
Then he wants to make sure they have the records. And in doing so, he explains what got them there, that they detected some weird signals and that they flew in and saw the time waves.
Strange.
And they're like, this is some fascinating, interesting business.
Yeah.
Good exposition.
It was the Guardian.
Well done.
Damn it, I can't even make a log entry.
Dan has clearly typed in L-O-G into his sound clip library.
I had to be a little creative, though, because I got a lot of illogicals, because that uses words. So I had to,
illogicals.
I had to do some there brain any, powers.
Logarithms? So. Does anybody ever say logarithm?
I don't think I'd ever record.
Do they ever make a reference to a natural logarithm?
I don't think I'd ever record anyone saying logarithm for any reason.
What about logarithmic?
I mean, I don't see why.
Come on.
Who wants to think about fucking logarithms? Those are the biggest pain in the ass.
Yeah, but logarithms are like for example, the pattern in how a tree's branches spiral around in order to maximize the light that reaches each leaf.
It makes cool pictures, but when you have to like do it in math problems, it's really annoying for me for some reason.
Is there a difference in the degree of aggravation between natural logs and regular logs?
Well, natural logs are the only one that fit in the toilet. Because they're from my butt. Because they're natural. That means poop. But
from your natural
butt. But the regular logs are just like tree logs.
I guess I inadvertently opened myself.
Opened the log door. I opened my log door earlier.
Opened the log.
The log trap.
We're gonna get one of those complaints where people are like, "There's too much potty humor."
Logs. Well, I'll follow it up with some smart talk. Are logs are the one where you like take like the exponent and figure out what the imponent is, and then you reverse them to get integrate the derivative shit?
Yeah. No, exactly.
Basically,
100%.
You know more than
you got to integrate the derivative, Jesse.
I'll go by what you say. You're the math guy.
What happens when you integrate the derivative of 1x? What do you get?
These nuts.
I think you just get 1x.
Thereabouts.
I don't know.
Thereabouts.
It is operating even now.
Okay. So,
what else?
They're on the bridge. There's all everything's going wacky.
And Kirk's like, "Bones, you sure you should be giving him that much stuff?" And Bones is like, "Fuck off!" Yeah, exactly.
He's just straight up fuck the hell off.
Yeah.
With your advice, buddy.
Yeah, but they had to guide themselves around time ripples that were like hundreds of millions of miles away or something, and that's why they had to do some shit, basically.
Yeah. Well, they were mapping them, too.
Yeah, always with the mapping.
It was a great example of Star Trek being forward-thinking in terms of, and science positive, because Kirk is all like, "Oh shit, everything's fucking going crazy, Sulu just got his face blown up," and then he goes to Spock, he's like, "Spock, what's the deal, everything's going crazy," and Spock's like, "No, this is some important shit," and Kirk immediately is like, "All right, keep going.
We got stuff to do.
Keep going. It doesn't matter if we blow up. In fact, I'll send my logs. This is like science is so important that I'll risk the Enterprise being torn to shreds because we've encountered something bizarre.
Starving.
And we want to record it and send as much of that information back home as we can. That's awesome."
That's what Starfleet does.
Damn right.
All right. Right, right.
Are you going to play something?
No, I was just...
Hologram?
I'm looking at you. You're like staring intently at your screen and your finger was hovering over it.
I know. I'm sorry. I was like...
It's sort of the ebb and flow of the conversation. It's sort of like there was a bit of a crescendo and he's like... Ah!
I know. I was organizing something because it looked out of place. Right. And then I didn't mean to mislead you into thinking that
got Jesse sneezing over
you. No, I that's good looks, Patrick.
Good looking out.
Good paying attention to me to figure out when I might hit a sound. It was my fault. This was my fault. I should have a signal. Like I put like my pinky and my forefinger up while I'm doing when I'm doing this. It means I'm organizing.
That's tight.
And I go like this. That means I'm organizing.
I really wish the audience could see you right now. Jesse's just over here doing some ASMR.
Speaking of ASMR.
That's right. Hey, by the way, we do have a Patreon, patreon.com/itsgotstartrek. And one of these days we're going to do a Jesse ASMR, which is just him sneezing and coughing, fucking slurping on some coffee.
Speaking of ASMR, I mean, this is now a good time to play it as any, even though this is kind of a later episode thing. There was some Edith Keeler ASMR going on. Here's one of them.
All right.
I'll figure it out eventually.
You hear it?
I'll figure it out eventually.
Here's another one. See if you can hear it.
And you.
She's doing the lip smack.
She's doing all the stuff I edit out of the podcast normally.
And you.
It's always,
I'll figure it out eventually.
It's so much mouth noise going on there.
And then there was something I was like going like that before I would say something. I used to do that. You were like, "Stop doing that."
No, Patrick tells you to stop doing that.
No, I'm talking. I'm sorry. I was looking at you. That was lame. Yes, Patrick.
This is a faulty towers gag.
Oh,
this is
goodness.
The hotel inspectors. Anyway. All right. So we got to go to break in just a second. But before we go to break, I did want to note that this is just the second Star Trek time travel episode.
Mm. Yeah.
After Tomorrow is Yesterday, which was earlier in season one, where they go back in time And deal with, there was some like fucking Air Force Navy shit. I forget exactly what that was about. However, in Miri, they do go back to an Earth that kind of looks like the 1950s. It's like a copy of Earth.
Kind of sucks.
With the Miri lizard, not lizard people, just all the kids. We talked about Miri. I don't remember which episode.
Yeah, that was the one when I had COVID.
If you go, were you here?
No, I was. I didn't.
Oh, you weren't here? Was it just Dan and I talking about Miri?
Yeah, like I was going to do it and I was like, I can't do it. I'm still saying I'm not.
Well, that gives you folks a clue as to
like
when
I watched
did,
it and I was like, Miri. I'm going to do it. And like it got to be time and I was like, oh no.
If you go to itsgotstartrek.com, you can search in the search bar Miri, you'll find it. It was probably a good episode. I don't remember.
Yeah, it's a good one.
I mean, it was a good episode of Star Trek. It was probably
it's a weird one. It was a weird one. It's got like people when they were weird little kids.
But anyway, that was another one where they use the same back lot that they use in this episode.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But I think they use it in other episodes
too. But it's kind of funny when you just think about
it's like 20th century.
How often time travel is employed in Star Trek, that this is only the second of those stories, and it's really one of the best. Utilizations of time travel to make a sort of an interesting moral point.
When I think the last time I saw this episode was like decades ago, and I remember very vividly the image of her slumped on the ground after, that's like my main memory, and I remember thinking like, why isn't she more bloody and mangled? Yeah. But like, because it was like, she was a pretty clean,
but
I mean,
when you got older, you learned how, when you watched all those videos of people getting run down by buses and things, and
no, I never watched those videos.
You just watched them on Rotten.com.
No, I never watched
4chan.
I never watched the violent ones.
Hey, that's why his nickname in high school was 4chan Dan, and that was before 4chan was a thing.
I think I saw one video of some dude.
They named it after him.
I think I saw one video once of some dude breaking his leg. I was like, I don't ever want to look at any of this ever again.
I sent you a hand surgery video once you got mad at me.
Yeah,
I just thought it was interesting. I wasn't trying to fuck with you. I just thought it was, I was like, hey, look, they're doing surgery on this guy's hand.
Okay, that might be interesting.
Dan was like, never send me something like that again. Yeah,
like actual violence is not cool.
All right, we got to go to break. So
we got to go to break.
We'll continue this conversation when we get back.
Maybe we will.
Which
maybe
will be in a moment,
won't.
But not just yet. Dan, you ready?
I'm ready.
All right, we'll be right back.
He has passed into what was.
We can talk about that later.
We're back.
Set up a landing party. Let's go get him.
Go get him.
Go get them.
Let's go get them.
Oh, no, we're not back yet.
Oh, there we are.
Oh, now we are. The button.
11, 12.
It wasn't 13. Counting. The digital display was not operating.
It just took a second.
It was not incrementing.
It just took a second.
Frightening. It was like a heartbeat.
Yeah. No, we haven't had any second break fun-em-ups in a while.
You opened it like a real pro.
And we won't have any today.
No, I was trying to think of one, but I just couldn't think
I'm
of
I'm frightened.
The only idea I could think of, I was going to be like, what's a list of famous women that should have died to make the world better? And then I thought, you know, that quite likely would have come off incorrectly. I think
it
would be not ready to take on any tigers just yet.
But I was just like, you know, I was just trying to grab onto what was the core plot element of this episode.
That depends on who you ask.
Oh, I never mentioned that Bones had a cool. Well, I guess that's kind of off topic. I was just going to say, at the opening part, Bones had a cool double chop thing he did. Do you remember that double chop he did? He chopped that, like, the transporter guy.
Oh, yes. When he was.
He chopped him in the kidneys and then chopped him in the back of the neck.
And it was really quick, too.
Yeah. It looked cool. I mean, it looked fake, but like it looked cooler than most of the chops.
It looked
cooler than most of the chops you see in Star Trek. Usually, it's this big wind up in this weird weak chop, but Bones is all fast. He's like bam, bam. Ooh, yeah, and then
Bones is tight,
and that's pretty ballsy to like fucking go at a police officer like that. You know,
that was just like, we don't care. We're time criminals.
Yeah.
All right.
All right, so McCoy.
I recorded the whole.
We're dangerous.
The whole silly section of the silly music section when they steal the clothes.
Well, let's get to that in a second.
I know, it's just funny. I just think that musical part.
I do like that too.
We're dangerous.
My comment on that was going to be: I Star Trek needs to get back to the this identical style of music.
Yeah,
they need to do a TV series that's the music they use, but. First, McCoy overdoses. He goes crazy. He starts talking about assassins.
He took 50 times more. He took 50 times more than you were supposed to.
Was it 50 times?
Yeah, the two drops saves a life. He got 100 times that. So no, I'm sorry. He got 100 times more.
200 times.
I was thinking, 100 times. I was thinking he had 100 drops, and if the two is saves a life, 100 is 50 times more.
No, but you said 100 times two drops?
No, listen.
200 drops.
Listen. Right. Two drops saves a life. Bones got 100 times that. I mistakenly thought when I read that, it said Bones got 100 drops, which would mean 50 times, but it's actually 100 times, which would be 200 drops.
That's a lot of drops. Can you imagine if you took that much LSD?
That's a lot of LSD. I would go crazy.
Okay. So McCoy goes...
Murderer! I'd be yelling about assassins.
Beams down.
He kept saying about assassins and murderers.
They're going to get us.
The rest of them beam down. They encounter the ruins.
How come they could... I know it's part of the plot, whatever, but like there was no control panel. There was no interface on
this Guardian. You mean for the Guardian of Time?
Yeah, the Guardian of Forever.
No, he was voice activated, like Siri.
Yeah, but if you can talk... You can talk to him, but you can't be like, hey, Guardian of Forever, can you go to this time period? He's like, I just can't do that.
He was made to function in this way.
I was made to function in this story where I looped through all of time.
Well, I mean, I get it.
You can get him to start over.
I mean, it's not like one of those things that bothers me about the plot, but it's a little silly.
He's over 10,000 centuries old.
It's just an arbitrary...
10,000 centuries.
And then he's even older when you see him in Discovery.
Yeah. It's an arbitrary roadblock they put up because, like, look, if you're going to make it difficult for someone, there's other ways to do it than just, like, it just seems so random that the creator's like, okay, we're going to have it go like a video cassette. I don't know why I added cassette to that.
Same diff.
We're going to make it like a video.
Like a reel-to-reel.
Well, we're going to make a video that all focuses on Earth and it goes forward in time and you got to jump in at the right time instead of just saying like, I want to go in this place or being like, only take them to where you think they're supposed to go. It's like, no, we're going to play a video.
Would you prefer that the Guardian of Time was just slightly petulant? He was like, I'm not going to let you go.
We're
going to
play a bunch of like old stock, like
I'm not
going
to tell you
footage.
When I'm sending you back. I'll send you back to close, but I don't know.
That would make more sense because like, it would mean like the Guardian of Forever decides where you go instead of this sort of, like I said, an arbitrary roadblock where they put up this video that goes from start to finish.
Here's an Egyptian movie. Here's a Roman movie.
It is funny and though. Those are all like Paramount,
and,
not Paramount, like
and
yeah.
like and of course they
Daisy
all
Lou,
and of course
all and stuff.
And okay, look. Okay, why were they all on Earth? Now I think they were all on Earth because like
well, you said it was your view.
Okay.
Not
I'm explaining why first. Well, did I hear when I said now I think that the reason why? Okay. So
you're right. I forgot that you think things.
He did that. He did that thing.
You think valid things.
No, it's not that they're valid or invalid. It's that I don't get a chance to defend my point.
No, they can be valid without being right.
I just want to be able to defend my point.
Let him say it.
I just want to be able to defend what I'm saying before I get contradicted.
Well, say what you're saying and then defend it.
Like you know, I'll be like, well, here in this part they blah blah blah, and someone will jump in and be like, but no, see, that's why it was wrong. I was like, no, I'm not finished yet. If you let me get to the
we've done this song and dance before.
Look, I'm saying that. Okay,
all right.
Why would they only show video from Earth? Now I'm saying they're only showing video from Earth because the Guardian of Forever has that ability to show whatever the fuck, wherever the fuck he wants, whenever he wants. So there's already some kind of like some kind of selection mechanism that is allowed to the Guardian of Forever.
He's ignoring Spock. But he's like, here's your history.
Human.
Right.
But it clearly didn't include Vulcan history.
So my point was that he clearly has a choice. The Guardian Forever clearly has a choice. Guardian of Forever clearly has a choice in what he allows people to see and where they get to go, because Kirk can't just zap off into some other planet. He's got the selection in front of him, which is why it's more baffling to me why they would just play a video from what front to end, considering the Guardian Forever can choose wherever he wants to show him. He could show him the same image over and over again if he wanted. Or in his parameters, he says that the people who made me forced me to play this video of time over and over again. But it's up to me to show you which planet it's from. Is that basically what we're to understand?
I'm that the Guardian totally Forever, fine with that. I can
the
see
Guardian,
it.
Right. The Guardian only gets to choose where, but the maker chooses how to display the when.
Well, maybe it was based on whoever was looking at it. If it was a crew of like Andorians or whatever,
yeah,
like,
he would have gone Andor style.
I know, and that's what I'm saying. My whole point is that the Guardian of Forever is allowed to choose what places they get to go.
But then it's like on a CD or something. But the Guardian, it's optical media.
The Guardian of Forever is allowed to show people where they can go, but he's not. They are not allowed to show when people can go.
I was going to say we probably shouldn't gender the.
Yeah, no.
He started. He started with Egypt. He didn't. There's stuff that happened before Egypt or other than Egypt.
So Egypt. Well, my point is just that it's established in the rules from what we see that the Guardian of Forever is allowed to tell people their options. He's allowed to give them their options, but he's not allowed to show them the order, the mechanism with which they get to choose.
Well, I'm happy.
It's a very old artifact. It's like mechanism.
Yeah, he's like, I can show you Earth, but the guy programming told me that I have to play it in order, and that's how you go in.
I'm happy to sign on to
the '60s, man.
To the proclamation that Dan finds this obnoxious.
No, I'm just saying, like, I'm just trying to make sure that we're all on the same page, right? The Guardian Forever can choose what you see, but he can't choose how you see it.
Yes, we're on the same page. We just are dealing with different levels of aggravation. For me, there was something that did aggravate me about this. Why did Spock say that the Guardian of Forever was over 10,000 centuries old instead of just saying, like, dude's like a million years old?
Spock said that.
Yeah, Spock said that. That's
you
what
said
I said.
You said Kirk.
Spock was like
Spock.
Weirdly.
You said Kirk.
Weirdly.
I guarantee you said Kirk.
Well, we'll find out later.
He said Spock. Spock was weirdly off in this episode, and then like the Guardian was all sassing him.
Yeah, I love that part.
And he was getting all irritated.
But Spock was, first of all, there's two problems here. First of all, Spock says 10,000 centuries, which I guess is just a more fun way of saying a million years, but whatever.
Sure.
And then it's like, well, he's clearly older than that because the Guardian of Forever was all like, I was jerking off before your son was anything. And the sun, the sun was 4.6 billion years old. They knew that in the 1950s. They knew that 10 years before they filmed this episode, right? This is not...
It's an old ball of gas.
And even in the late 1800s, fucking Lord Kelvin was estimated the Earth at being like 100
Kelvin,
million years old.
Right.
So they know the Earth was older than a million years old.
Since before your sun burned hot in space and before your race was born, I have awaited a question.
That is a pretty sassy thing.
Which
to
implies
lay on
he's got to be way older than that because he's implying that his people died off. Whatever people were in that ruins behind him were gone since before the sun erupted into flame.
He
right?
could be totally full of shit and be like, these Starfleet guys really eat
it
this.
It could
shit
be.
Up.
That goes
like,
to Dan's point. That
I'm like 300 years old. I'm going to tell. I'm just going to lay some.
This episode does
on.
Make a lot more sense if Dan's theory is correct or Dan's preference of the Guardian of Forever just being a piece of shit, like a prankster, like a pranky.
I never specifically said he was a prankster.
From her.
Well, I suggested that, and you agreed that would make more sense.
When did I agree that the Guardian
Joker.
Forever was a prankster?
Maybe he's the cosmic Joker.
All I was saying is the Guardian of Forever is allowed to show people what their selection is, but they're not allowed to show people the order in which those selections are presented to them and what way they get to choose.
Okay, all right.
These are just built. It's just the rules on how he was built.
Those Your science words. Knowledge is obviously primitive.
Yeah. Boy is full of words.
Spock. So Spock like gets offended twice in this episode. Yeah. One time when he tells Spock he's dumb at science, and then when Kirk expects him to build like a computer in the 30s, like Spock's like
the reverse psychology.
And then when
totally works.
He wants some platinum.
And then Kirk's like, "Yeah, I always pose an extremely complex problem in logic, Mr. Spock." And Spock's like, "Huh?" And then he's like, "Excuse me. Sometimes I expect too much of you." And then Spock's like, "Fuck you, man."
I'm gonna do it.
And then he's like buckling under the pressure later because he's all like, "Captain, you're asking me to work with equipment which is hardly very far ahead of stone knives and bearskins." And then Edith is like, "What is that?" He's like, "I'm endeavoring, ma'am, to construct a mnemonic memory circuit using stone knives and bearskins." He's just being a smartass.
She's like, "What the fuck?"
Dude? Yeah, and then she was just like, "Whatever."
She's like, I'm not gonna fuck with that.
Yeah, whatever you say, man.
Looks like a goddamn radio or a theremin.
I liked how casually he was like, "Oh yeah, I'm just overloading the circuits. Don't worry about it." Which, of course, they should have worried about because it knocked 30 hours off their
fuck up.
Yeah, they knocked 30 hours off their fucking job.
Well, the long and the short of it is that
I think you said the long and the short of it three times this episode.
This episode,
he says it every other episode.
At least two.
The long and the short of it is that they beam down. McCoy jumps through, being all like, "Assassins, assassins!"
Assassins!
And then they figure out, "Oh shit."
Murderers!
Everything turned to shit. Which is a great concept, right? It's just right there. Mm-hmm. I imagine how awesome it must have been to be watching this in 1966, even on a small TV, even if it was black and white.
Yeah, we get our big old TVs now.
If you were lucky enough to have a color TV.
Nobody has two televisions.
But to watch this and this, the concept.
Is it nobody has two televisions or TVs?
Yeah. What's a rerun?
I can't remember if he says TV or television.
It's Back to the Future reference. Yeah. That's still allowed until episode 300. Then we can. It's exclusively Back to the Future Part 2 references.
That guy was Wayne from The Wonder.
Okay, so McCoy jumps through, assassins. But the idea, you're watching this in 1966, this clever idea of, oh shit, somebody fucked with time and now our spaceship is gone. Mm-hmm. What's going to happen? The Harlan Ellison version had it, the spaceship not disappear, but rather turn into a pirate ship, which is a cool idea.
Yeah, it's like the Terran universe.
But again, you can't afford it on a TV budget.
Right? I don't know why Spock and Kirk jumped together when he told Uhura to go on her own and Scotty to go on their own. I mean,
Was
he just saying they didn't come back?
Yeah, what he said was like, we're going to jump in at separate times to make sure we get it. And then Scotty and Uhura were going to jump in, but they came back right after they left time. Right, so they never even got a chance to jump in. Yeah. So I don't know if Scotty was supposed to go with Uhura. Maybe they were supposed to go together. Maybe that's what I missed out on.
I understood it to be my understanding was if this doesn't work, jump through and save your life.
So
jump wherever.
They front loaded their attack with Kirk and Spock when they were like, just in case this falls off, we have a backup plan.
Well, and the backup plan being you guys don't starve to death on this fucking planet.
Right.
Make your way to some point in history.
Whichever time period.
Wouldn't that be an awesome Star Trek spinoff? The alternate version of this storyline where we have to follow Uhura in ancient Egypt and fucking Scotty shows up in fucking the 21st century Enterprise style.
Only if they're walking in front of a blue screen going where are we? And there's a picture of the pyramids behind him and they walk off screen and they walk and there's the Eiffel Tower behind him. They're like, I don't know where we are. Muppets thing.
Computer.
Spock was all pissed at himself because he forgot to record the past as it was passing by him.
I identified with that. That's the kind of thing where I'm like, oh man.
I know, but he got a second chance. All they had to do was wait for the recording to come to the end. That's how they were able to jump in, is they waited.
Because you can get that guy to play it again.
So he could have just waited for him to play it again.
Or asked, because that's what they said. They said that we asked him to play it again, and he was like, all right, I'll do it.
Yeah, we can play again.
I
wonder if they could stop it short and start from the beginning, or if they had to wait until the end of... Does it go to the future?
Can you scratch it DJ
does
style?
Does the Guardian of Forever go to the future?
I bet it does. I bet
it's forever, man.
That's what they should have had.
Forever.
For their control pad, they should have had a turntable. That would have been awesome.
I should have never gone on that riggedy-ass bridge with Captain Picard. Dragging me out on the fucking Nexus.
I guess I didn't know.
He should have had a turntable, like you said, Patrick, so that's how they could have gone through the time. They could have scrubbed through it with a turntable. Yeah. A turntable.
Something to think about in the next remaster. You can see if you can get them to remaster the episode to include a turntable on the Guardian of Forever.
How did they determine which points on Earth were the most notable at the time period given that they happened to be at that moment showing
the
them?
Question asked by and of and for and against all documentarians.
Okay, I just want to be clear that these aren't complaints. I'm all good with this kind of this shit of all the rules there. I know it sounded like I was against it, but really I was just trying to clarify the rules. But this is fine. It's all fine. It's fine. Doesn't bother me.
All right,
it's just
are our friends.
But it still exists, and so it's I feel compelled to point it out, even though this is an example where you're allowed to get a little wacky.
I've never known you to have any compulsions, Dan.
You're allowed to get a little wacky sometimes, but it just has to flow. And I felt
I'm getting wacky all the time.
And I felt this flowed well. The wackiness and the rule breaking, they didn't explicitly break any rules, but there were some questions, but it flowed and the episode was good enough that it actually adds to the camp or the goodness or whatever.
Part of what makes TOS
say it again, Dan.
So consistent.
My time turntable.
So consistently great. But not every TOS episode's a hit. There's lots of clunkers, especially later
Spock's
on
brain.
Third season
Spock's
stuff.
Brain.
But
he control him with three buttons.
But there is a consistency to the quality of the writing and the structure of these episodes of Star Trek, particularly in season one. I think season one is probably the strongest of the TOS seasons. But it's things like this where they focus on the story they're trying to tell, and they don't pay too much attention to the little bits that you're talking about, Dan. Like, they're like,
my friend is obviously Chinese.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was about to get to.
He caught his head in a mechanical rice picker. Yeah.
Okay, like,
sorry if I stole your thunder there.
No. I'm glad you played that, because yes, go ahead, Jesse.
Well, it almost sounds like he's like trying to imagine like what people from this time period would think about. Yes. He was, you know, so it's sort of like, you know, it's forgivable.
Yeah.
What he says.
Somewhat. Yes.
It works somewhat
in the context. Yes. It works in the context. Yes. So
you can sort of imagine.
Isn't that kind of like what they said back then when someone didn't look like they were from around here? They were just kind of
Chinese.
They're Chinese if they have some kind of physical
Chinese.
I think there were, it's common in all sorts of places to pick a certain other place. Remember how like everyone called the flu, the 1918 flu, they're like, it's the Spanish flu. And then there would be like, oh no, this is the English disease.
It was from like World War One, right? They didn't fight World War One in Spain.
Well, there was also the part they were trying to explain like to the officer what was going wrong, and then Spock was all like, you know, Captain, perhaps I mangled my ear in that incident where I mangled my ear, like,
yeah,
as a child, from a rice picker.
He was like, yeah, his ears got fucked up from a rice picker.
What is a rice picker?
A mechanical rice picker.
Police guy was like, what's wrong with your ears? Or they were basically like, yeah, I know his ears are weird. And Spock, and they were like, ask him what happened. And Spock, instead of being like, yeah, it was that rice picker incident, he was like, Captain, maybe it was, you know, like,
they were doing improv, and it was funny because they didn't need to, the police officer asked them no questions. He didn't mention any ears. He didn't say you guys look like fucked up alien people or time travelers. He was just looking at them, and it was like the kid who, like, the parent comes in and just starts staring at the kid, and the kid's like, well, here's the thing, and then just starts like talking too much.
Right. And it was ridiculous.
You see, that's why you have a right to remain silent.
And it's ridiculous because, like, you know, presumably you would remember what it was that tore your ears up as a kid, and you wouldn't have to like be like, maybe it was that thing. I don't know. Ears getting all torn up. I don't know. Maybe.
But something that happened right around then, right before then, I think. Is...
Oh, by the way, this is proof and disproof that Vulcans can lie, because on the one hand, they can't lie, which is why Spock was so bad at lying. But on the other hand, they can lie because he still lied in the end and said, like, I'm Vulcan. He didn't say, like, I'm Vulcan. So that's kind of a lie.
A lie of omission.
But it does show that they aren't good at lying. At least, can we at least admit that Vulcans are not good at lying? Can we agree on that?
No, I think some of them are brilliant at lying.
They're really good at lots of stuff,
including Spock.
But like, that was such a terrible lie.
Yeah, because they were a little caught off guard. They just traveled through time. Their friend is screaming about assassins.
I think your average Vulcan.
And
I think your average Vulcan is less likely to.
And
I think your average Vulcan is less likely to lie than your average human.
If I say "and" again, are you going to repeat it?
And
killers.
And what?
And Spock almost gets hit by a car, which I think I wanted to bring that up because watching this episode this time, I think it might be the first time I caught that foreshadowing. Which is, that's again an example of good writing, very good writing by very professional writers to put in this initial foreshadowing of cars are dangerous and walking in the street is dangerous.
You changed the subject.
No, I was trying to say that for the last 5 minutes.
Okay, I was just saying, like, can we admit that Vulcans don't lie as much as humans
do? And I disagree with that. I think Jesse disagrees as
Why
well.
Are you speaking for Jesse?
I'm not speaking for Jesse.
Were you trying to team up with him against me?
No, I just recall him.
Why do you always say that?
Agreeing with me.
You know as well as I do how out of place you two are around here.
You have, like, some kind of inferiority.
No, I just know you guys team up.
Jesse, no, he just wanted to play that particular sound.
No, I didn't.
Who teams up?
No, I didn't.
You Look, guys team up.
But you just spoke for Jesse.
You guys talk about computers.
Jesse, do you think that the average Vulcan lies less than the average human?
I don't know. I mean,
he had an answer. He had an answer, and you didn't let him give that answer. You were just like, Jesse agrees. Jesse agrees.
I don't know, but who's the average Vulcan?
Okay. Well, your average run-of-the-mill Vulcan.
T'Pol?
Just your average run. Look, okay.
T'Pol's a good Vulcan.
We can move on.
I don't know if she's average.
I think I've made my...
Yeah, right.
I think above average. I think I've made my point.
Okay. All right. Well done, Dan. Point well received.
The only possible answer would conclusively prove that I'm either unconscious or demented.
DeForest Kelly is great in this episode.
Hell yeah.
And he has a lot to do.
I am Leonard McCoy.
But...
I'm a surgeon.
but...
Not a psychiatrist.
I am the guardian of forever. I am both, and neither.
I am Sinistar. I hunger.
No, Sinistar.
Okay. Run.
No! Okay. All right, I get it now. Thank you.
Run.
That's appreciated. It's a good one.
Sinistar is fucked up.
Yeah, So McCoy goes back in time, then Kirk and Spock go back in time. Spock almost gets hit by a car.
Yep.
They steal some clothes. They have to run from the police. All this stuff happens. But another thing that I thought would be really interesting to 1966 audience, and maybe I'm underestimating the amount of sci-fi they were exposed to the general public, the same audience as Star Trek. I don't know. But the idea... that the somewhat mind-bending idea that, okay, to solve this problem, we've got to go back in time before McCoy. Mm-hmm. Now, it all makes perfect sense, but when you're talking about time travel, this is not just traveling back in time. This is two separate time travel instances where one guy travels back in time, causes a problem, so now we got to go back in time before that guy, but we don't know exactly how much before. It's going to be like a week or two before. Okay, now we're back in time. Now we're trying not to cause the same problem he caused, but we got to wait around for him. We've got to figure out how we're going to see this guy.
Spock looked like super like terrified, almost as scared as I've seen Spock look when he saved her from falling down the stairs.
Yes.
And he was like, that was like the most like, oh shit, I've seen Spock.
Oh no, sorry, I misread the clock. I thought we were about to go on break, but we're not about to.
We're
go
not
on.
About
we
to.
We got some time.
Yeah, we got some time.
Time we face the unpleasant facts.
Time is time.
So Spock and Kirk, after they deal with the cop, they run off and they happen to end up in this 21st Street mission, hiding in the basement.
Mm-hmm.
Edith Keeler comes down the stairs. The camera lens gets all Vaseline-y.
It's super obvious. Super obvious.
She's so dreamy.
Way Vaseline-y.
I know.
And she finds two men in her basement and interlopers.
Are you following me, sir?
Putting their clothes on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, she missed that bit. But
yes,
the audience did not.
She has a kind heart and she takes pity on them, and Kirk immediately starts flirting with her.
Mm-hmm. He's got to stop doing that.
There's that shot of like Kirk all looking all like,
hey. Yeah.
He's like, this Keeler must die. This Keeler must die.
Should be a song called Edith Keeler. There's got to be a song out there called Edith Keeler.
Isn't there a band called
Edith Keeler? There should be a band.
I think there's a band called Edith Keeler Must Die. I could be wrong about that. I didn't look it up, but I think there may be. I'm going to go ahead and...
It's necessary.
I'm going to think that. I'm just going to keep thinking that. If it's not true, maybe somebody out there will make it true.
Don't you know?
Don't you know?
I know nothing.
No.
Nothing in now. So anyway, they get hooked up with this Edith Keeler business. It's
she's running like a soup kitchen.
Yeah, she's
Except
got this.
Instead of like proselytizing to people about religion, she's doing it with about science.
Yeah,
which is kind of awesome.
Brilliant because this is a pro science episode.
Yeah. Those dudes were all like, "Oh, now we have to listen to her talk," and I was like, "Well, she didn't say anything bad."
Well, she even
like,
put
wait
a
minute.
Book.
Like,
she put a book on the piano, so they really everything they purposefully were trying to set it up. That she was about to prophesize about Jesus or something
not
similar.
That she's a bad looking broad.
She goes, there's a piano.
She
so
really
you think
wanted
she's
to
gonna,
help out a fella in need.
She's going
to
start singing. Like playing some hymns.
Yeah, and then there's like the hymn book or the Bible. You're not sure what it
there
is.
There need
but
to be some more science
like.
Hymns. Why aren't there any science hymns?
Yeah, because well, then she just busts out. Well,
I think it's they might be giants.
Yeah, I was going to say they might be giants.
You think that
science is real?
Would you consider
science is real?
The Schoolhouse Rock kind of like a science? Because it's about politics. It's about politics.
It's a public policy.
Yeah, it's a public policy, but. Yeah, but like
that's a science.
That's a science, I guess.
Well, it's a social science.
Yeah. Soft science.
Poli-sci.
Fuck you. I didn't mean anything by that. I know that sounded like I meant something.
You look straight ahead and you're like,
math versus humanity.
I swear to you.
We use a lot of fucking math.
No, I swear to you. I know how that sounded, and that's not at all what I meant.
This is hilarious. Anyway, what were we talking about? Oh, yes. The very pro science episode. So she's telling all this science stuff about like, won't it be great when people are like awesome and just worry about like being nice to each other? I mean, it's basically saying what Jesus said, except using science to say it instead of.
Right.
It's just the same idea.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be great if people were fucking kind to each other?
How there's going to be like, there's going to be progress. She's saying there's going to be like a change and people are going to start like. advancing technology and harnessing.
Right. Yeah. So the thing is there's no reason for her to believe that people are going to start using science for the benefit of humankind. Now, that, of course, is the Gene Roddenberry, like, but
the
that's
benefit
his,
of Mr. Kite.
But this is not, I don't think this was this specifically Gene Roddenberry's prediction of the future that it'd be all nice? Or was it just like, I sure hope it is this way?
Well, I wouldn't say prediction necessarily. Certainly Gene Roddenberry's vision.
Jesus Roddenberry.
All right, well, I'm sure he wouldn't mind that particular comparison, which is one of the perplexing things, some of the peculiar things you have to deal with. People who come up with grand ideas sometimes also have a bit of a megalomaniacal side to them.
Scientology guy.
Yes, L. Ron Hubbard. But Gene Roddenberry.
What on earth is that?
The philosophy he had was a positive philosophy, which I think a lot of Star Trek fans, that's what draws them to Star Trek. Yeah. And that's what disappoints them when they see Star Trek maybe drifting away from that sometimes here or there. Now,
I would imagine that line, that little section of her saying that was probably added in by Gene Roddenberry. Although, unless coincidentally, it was in the original story of that, like, Edith Keeler thing.
It sounded very Roddenberry-ish to me.
Yeah, it did.
If you ask me.
If you ask me, too.
Yeah, and I think it's certainly a philosophy I would like to follow. Something I'd like to hope for. I know it's hard in the intervening times while we're very far from that future right now. Mm-hmm. Part of what makes this story so interesting is the argument, which I think there's a certain validity to it. I don't know if it's right or wrong, but the argument that to get to that future requires some trials, some stuff along the way. That's the way the world works, kind of thing.
She was right, but at the wrong time.
See, yeah. I thought that was a really interesting point, because on the one hand, it's kind of non-Star Trek-y because it's kind of saying, like, there's a time for battle and murder and destruction, and there's a time for peace is kind of what it's implying. But on the other hand, it is a very interesting point of, like, peace is the way to go, but you got to do it in the right way
prerequisites.
Prerequisites. It was like, it's hard to figure out, like, if that's a good message or a mixed message or what, but it's interesting.
Like, Star Trek is our future. That's what they're saying.
Well, hopefully. Well, we'll see.
Hopefully. And they're trying to correct the timeline.
You know what it
was called? Depression.
Is definitely in our future.
I don't know.
Yeah, we got to take a break. It's that time. So we're going to do that right now. And when we get back, we will conclude our discussion of The City on the Edge of Forever. Be right back.
All that you knew is gone.
Totally alone.
Mr. Hazard.
And we're back.
Hold on a second.
Wait, are we back?
Oh, no, we're back.
We're not back. Hold on. I gotta push the button. Okay, now I think we're back.
And now we're back.
You only left a moment ago.
Now we're back.
For us, time does not exist.
Time does.
That's what I'm talking about, man.
Indeed, still exists. It's marching right along.
Hell
and
no.
We have less and less time to talk about this episode.
Something or someone down on this planet can affect changes in time, causing.
We're actually passing through ripples in time.
Time we face the unpleasant facts.
This boy is
rather barbaric
words.
Period in your American history.
Time has resumed its shape. All is as it was before.
Time. There's a lot of time words in this episode.
I think that time has resumed its shape was one of the only
time has come
lines
again.
That was retained from the original Harlan Ellison script.
Oh. Who's to say when the exact time will come?
It's not yet time. What? Time we face the unpleasant facts.
That's the you know for a fact that that was like the only line.
No, there was that line, and then another thing the Guardian of Forever says at the beginning. I can't remember what it was. What are the other esoteric things? Something about time is blah blah blah. I don't know that you have it.
Was it another thing about time?
I think so, maybe. Maybe not time. I don't know.
Is it the one where I've waited for this question for a long time?
No, I don't think so. It's on fucking Memory Alpha.
Many such journeys are possible.
Probably not that.
No, definitely not.
It was
not
about
that.
Hot dogs.
What was interesting was...
Oh, Spock and jeans?
No. I mean, yes.
Spock and jeans,
Spock
man.
Spock and a hat.
Spock and jeans
and
was...
And a beanie thing.
Was interesting. But no. What I was thinking was...
I liked Spock and jeans.
I was thinking the Edith Keeler music, especially when she was introduced, was very reminiscent of Casablanca.
Mm.
It had a little bit of a...
That was the romance music.
Yeah. For real, dude.
As time goes by.
So there was that. Then there was this is the music when she died at the end. It's kind of like similar to what you, the meeting music is.
He knows, Doctor.
It's like, it's sadder this time around. But it's like that same kind of thing where the violins are all like going like.
Classic.
But like.
Cinematic.
See, here's the one bit of music that I think worked really well during that time period, but I wasn't getting like the dire sad feelings from that little tune. But that's probably just a product of my time. Like back then,
it's like
that was probably super
expressionism.
Sad. Yeah, back then that was probably super emotional, but to me it didn't seem that emotional. Although like it worked as like a romantic sort of intro music thing that Patrick was mentioning.
Word, yeah.
And then there was like, of course, the
whimsical music.
This is right, it's Kirk is stealing clothes. From like someone living in a
like a Warner Brothers cartoon.
Yeah,
like a bunch of woodwinds.
Wile E. Coyote.
It's
like
not over yet.
Tiptoeing along.
Come.
That's where he's tiptoeing.
It keeps going. Yeah. Meep meep. Yeah, it is like a Wile E. Coyote kind of thing.
Or Dennis the Menace.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
Black
right.
and white one where he's like running, looking over a fence, throwing
no
a baseball.
Talking like a grizzled 1890s prospector. Concern it.
Did you get that clip because of all the various characters that were in the mission? Like the guy who was clearly suggesting that if Edith Keeler wanted to help those men, she should have given them a bunch of hand jobs.
Shut up.
Or
shut
up.
Yeah, that's
Kirk. Kirk is all like, shut up.
Yeah.
Shut up. Don't talk about my lady giving hand jobs.
Yeah.
For real.
There was also that guy when Kirk announces the spot that he says,
we have a flop.
A flop.
There was some like old grizzled prospector
who just walks between them, brushing his like eyebrows or something, or his beard.
A flop is a place to sleep.
A flop. We have a flop.
A flop is a place to sleep.
Play that again, because that's like a fucking Mary Poppins shit. I want some fucking music to go along with that.
All right.
A flop is a place to sleep.
We have a flop.
A flop is
a place to sleep.
A flop is a place to sleep. Here we go by our feet. The flop is a place to sleep.
How did she get to New York? Why is she in New York?
What, with her accent?
Yeah, she's like from
her
England.
Joan Collins
she's from
accent?
England.
Silly question. Want to hear a silly answer?
Don't you know? A flop is a place to sleep.
I really like that.
Don't you know? A flop is a place to sleep.
But to answer the question, like right then, some old guy with like a grizzled beard and a hat, and he looked like an old prospector. Yeah. So that's why I got
that's why you got that.
No talking like a grizzled 1890s prospector.
Yeah.
Although,
a bit of a stretch because it's not anything directly in the episode other than my interpretation of what that guy
also
looked
the guy
like.
Doesn't say anything, so he doesn't talk like a
he doesn't talk like anything,
he's silent, but it is
run
oh my god,
it is funny that
it's nice to hear Bart Simpson
sort of barges his way through, purposefully walks in between Kirk and Spock there.
Did you think that so when Spock when she catches him stealing shit, she's like, you broke into that stuff, what's going on? And Spock's like, I needed the tools for my radio work, they'd have been returned in the morning. And she's like, I'm sorry, I can't. And Kirk's like, if Mr. Spock says that he needs the tools and that they'll be returned tomorrow morning, it doesn't sound like he's like gonna, it sounds like he's gonna follow it up with like, that's what he's gonna do, so you see, you know, like,
well, he's doing a Jedi mind trick.
Yeah.
And he's appears to be flexing his penis a little bit.
Yeah, well, he ends it with like, you can bet
he's doing a Kegel exercise. Well,
his pants are on.
I was just, that first part sounds so menacing, like he sounds like if he says he's gonna do it, you know, that sounds like
they're he's like standing by the furnace.
He's standing by the furnace looking off in the distance, right? He's like, if he says he's going to do it, he's going to do it. All right, see, now you better just move along. He's going to do it. But he ends it with...
Why are you guys hanging out down here? What are you burning in the furnace? What's going on down here?
But he ends the sentence with, you can bet your reputation on that, Miss Keeler, which in the end makes it turn like sound sweet and innocent. But it could have gone either direction in that point. But yeah, looking off like that, he sounded like he was going to menace her.
He's a scary human.
Yeah.
He was a scary human indeed. Human.
You know who's not a scary human? The milk
Spock.
Thief. No, the milk thief.
Oh, with a very deliberate milk bottle that he dropped? Dropping the milk bottle?
Yeah, and then he like sort of goes to help McCoy. He's scared of McCoy, and then he's like sort of helping him, and then he's like, I'm gonna rob this guy. He steals his phaser, and then he zaps himself. Did he zap himself in the version you guys saw?
Yeah, he did.
Because
there a version
there's a lot, there's versions where that's edited out. They edit out
it's
the
kind
scene.
Of pointless.
Well, I mean,
I guess it means that we know as an audience that he's not going to go tell on someone that he saw, because what did he beam off into space, or did he vaporize himself?
Well, and, you know, they could do a whole spin-off series about how there's actually, you know, they talk about the Prime Universe and the Mirror Universe and the Kelvin Universe. What about the universe where it turns out that that guy was important to the future?
Right.
And him vaporizing himself sort of mildly horrifically. I know it's not as bad as the, you know, other phaser things where they're just like all like,
the disruptors.
Well, he just sort of disappears.
I mean, he robbed like a someone who was like, you know, he robbed a sick person. That's fucked up. So so we know as an audience that he got what he deserved.
Well, and he was stealing milk, and that's kind of fucked up too.
Yeah.
I mean, he's hungry though.
But
I get it. You need nutrition.
Yeah, I'd like to know what happened to that guy. I would see a spinoff series, or at least a two-parter, maybe even a three-parter, or maybe a whole season of Voyager about that.
Yeah, like, it's just like they it turns out that when he vaporized himself, he didn't actually die. He got sent to the Delta Quadrant because fucking Amelia Earhart's in the Delta Quadrant. Every motherfucker's in the Delta Quadrant.
Oh yeah, the origin of like of part of the Earth population is from the Delta Quadrant.
Tattoo, the aliens came and taught the. Yeah, that's one of the great things about Tattoo, where they're like, let's do a story, about native peoples, and the lesson we'll teach is that native peoples were dumb morons until some aliens came and taught them native ways.
We talked about that's that funny. One recently.
Yeah, that one was not too long ago. It was pretty fucking.
Yes.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But it turned out, Spock, he only needed a small block of platinum, about 5 or 6 pounds.
I do.
I love that Kirk's reaction.
But this is also so classic. The
you just kicked him in
watching,
the
watching Spock try to cobble together some machinery.
Right.
Yeah, and then we've seen various references to this in Star Trek, but probably most famously in Enterprise's Carbon Creek, where it's a real direct homage to this. Where
they've done it in TNG a bunch.
In TNG, Deep Space Nine, in the aliens one, when they go back to Roswell,
and other TOS, like Spock is always like cobbling some stuff together.
Gotta cobble that shit together.
But speaking of that milk dude who zapped away, did you remember Bones like kind of like felt him up a little bit at first? If you go back and watch, he kept touching him, but in like various places, I think like
his
on his
milk places,
his milk milky places, and all his milk spots. He touched him in his milk spots. Jesse almost did a spit take.
What?
I'm gonna touch you in your milk spot.
Jesse almost did a milk spit.
A milk spit. He almost did.
Dan is very clearly very satisfied with this.
You take a sip too much of that old wood alky, and almost anything seems like if...
Right, in the Depression, people were drinking. Wood alcohol for some reason.
All sorts of stuff in
the couldn't
depression.
Just make regular alcohol.
No, you don't. You can't do that.
It'll make you go blind.
It will.
Maybe because of prohibition.
Yeah. Mm. So Kirk clearly, I mean, basically at first sight, falls in love with this Edith Keeler person.
Do you know what you just did?
We've talked many times in the past about how there is this prevalent false stereotype of Captain Kirk, where he's going around fucking every alien chick, doing this, that, and the other thing.
No, he's a romantic. He's a romantic, but he is often getting involved with people.
So I think, first of all, that stereotype.
Sometimes he just can't help
it. The stereotype is wrong. He's not a brash rule breaker, whatever. He does sometimes break the rules, but always with very thoughtful, philosophical support behind
it.
And he was known as a brainiac book nerd who like read the dictionary in fucking college.
What was that guy's name on that space guy on Futurama
Zap Brannigan?
Zap Brannigan. Was that supposed to be? I mean, it seems like that was like, that's your sort of like,
that's the stereotype.
That's your stereotype of Kirk, but that's
the worst aspects.
It seems like that's directly taken from like Kirk, but like you said, it's not. He does a lot of crazy shit, but it's all very thoughtful. And like the thing is, he does get like in intimate relations with a lot of people, but it's not him going like fucking and chucking. Yeah. Excuse the terminology, but he's like a romantic. But he is getting involved maybe a little too often, more than
fucker,
he should be.
Fucker and chucker. That was advice.
He's
given
a nice
to me.
Fellow.
I got when I was 13 years old, I got that advice from a 16-year-old Polish guy when he heard I had a crush on a certain gal.
Your science knowledge is obviously primitive.
At summer camp. I only
summer
mentioned
camp
that
in Europe.
I only met. Yeah, it was a European summer camp. Because you don't.
Was
need
that
to
a Monza?
No, it was in outside of Vienna.
Oh.
A flub is a place to sleep.
but anyway, back at the ranch. but the point I was making is that is an incorrect stereotype of Kirk, but I think if you combine this episode's popularity among the general public, this is an episode people know. If they don't know much Star Trek, they might know at least some of the basics here. There is some of that Kirk immediately falling in love with this woman and using that relationship to a degree to manipulate her, like when, as you just noted, when Scott Spock gets caught stealing stuff, Kirk is just like, hey, babe, don't worry about it, babe. Right. And he gives her some like,
this guy's all right.
He gives her cow eyes and she's all like, okay.
But then he actually ends up falling in love with her though.
So. No, I mean, I think he's actually in love with her and manipulating her.
And
I think he falls in love with her straight away.
What was the episode where they're underground and they find the robot people?
Are little girls made of?
Yeah, he falls in love with one of those people. There was some other episode on the ship where he fell in love with someone. So he does fall in love here and there.
Like you said, he's a romantic. Yeah, right. You're 100%
But you're right. That was kind of manipulative. What he was doing in the basement.
There was a little bit of that going on. So I can see people, you know, at least seeds of that stereotype, though it is unfortunate and false. Yeah. Other stuff about this going back in time business. So they're hanging out there. They're going to go see which movie were they going to see?
They didn't even say. They just said a Clark Gable movie.
Clark Gable. So yeah, we don't know the title, but that it was Clark Gable. And I love
you. Really are new at this, aren't you?
McCoy is all like, "Well, I know what a movie is.
Yeah,
I'm not
right.
Stupid.
Yeah." I'm wondering why they didn't mention the Clark Gable movie. I'm betting it's because they figured the general population would be more aware of who Clark Gable is than the name of any of his movies he's in.
Maybe. It could be. That's a good logic to it. Yeah, or why specify
I mean, it's kind of like, I guess, why they go to the bar, in shows they go to the bar and they say, like, I'll have a beer. It's like, well, which beer? But they always just order a beer that's probably like...
Just give me a brew. They don't want a local brew.
It's like a product placement thing or something. They don't want to place
movies,
a product.
Movies, but why wouldn't he know about, like, the history of movies?
Well, you know, it's the 1930s, you know. He's not expecting that.
Is that just not... Maybe
knows,
that, maybe that the, ends up not being significant.
He knows about, like, Zeep Glorbelnorp. And
and all the glibblows.
Zaphod Beeblebrox.
Exactly, yes.
Well,
whatnots.
Okay, so here's between Edith and Kirk at that
betwixt and between.
But where they were talking about going to the Clark Gable movie, she goes, if we hurry, maybe we can catch the Clark Gable movie at the Orpheum. Kirk's like, what? And then Edith goes, you know, Dr. McCoy said the same thing. He did not say the same thing. Dr. McCoy did not say the same thing. Dr. McCoy said, and we spoke it already, I've heard of a movie. He doesn't say, like, he doesn't go, like, what?
But essentially he said, what?
He didn't, but like, all, like, he could have been saying what as in, like, I didn't hear you. He could have been saying, like, what as in, like, I thought we were getting dinner first. He could have said, what as in, like, what movie? But, like, but all, so, like, McCoy says, and McCoy didn't say what, he said, a who movie. She said,
a who
she
movie.
Said, she says, my young man is taking me to a Clark Gable movie, and McCoy said, a who movie? But then, when she said, we're going to a Clark Gable movie, Kirk says, what? Those aren't the same thing. Those aren't nearly the same thing. At all. And by the way, do you think that Bones was totally hitting on her?
Oh, 100%.
And she brought
he found her charming.
Yeah, and she brought up like her date just to get him off her back. Well, be like, look, I'm taking for it.
And as we know from Dax, he had a surgeon's finger.
Right. Oh, gross. Yeah.
I know. I
forgot about that.
That line fingers. Was both gross and charming to me, that Dax line.
Yeah.
It was the implications. Somewhat.
Think about the implications.
A little bit naughty. A little bit naughty. A lot of implications
which
in this
Dax,
episode.
Which Dax was that?
That was Jedzia. It was in Trials and Tribulations.
It was one of her ancestors.
Oh, yes, yes.
How long before we get a full answer?
Emany Dax. Yeah, see an enemy.
That's like enemy, you say, except you say Emany.
Every time they showed this shot of the stock footage shot, stock film shot of the Brooklyn Bridge, the Night Court theme started playing in my head.
Burner. and I
you
know
used to play that at band practice like every time.
I guess I did. Yeah,
like for a while.
And then Martin always played the Power Rangers theme on the saxophone.
Yeah, but no, I like Pomo Guamo practice.
Oh, was I? Yeah. Oh, yeah, because the bass line's awesome.
People in bands that people will not be familiar with.
No, Martin Fisher would play that other song at like, you know, just regular band. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The Voyage of crazy. The Moon.
Dan's just looking at his phone. You guys are talking about
no. I was trying to figure out
guys from high school bands.
I was working out the part when they got paid. No, it was just I was actually multitasking.
Oh, right? Because of the 15 cents per 15 hour, cents 10 hour days.
So $1.50 a day. That's $7.50 a week, which is
and the Flophouse costs what $2 a week.
It's not bad.
It's pretty
not
good bad. Deal.
Yeah. How much was the Flophouse?
$2 a week. I think.
Was it Flophouse?
And you get to have that soup, and she just like. You know,
and a big chunk of bread.
She
that
gets
bread
up on
good.
The stage and tells you some stuff.
I bet that coffee was good too.
Yeah,
I mean it's no
coffee's not that hard.
Flat white.
It's not that hard to make.
It's no cappuccino, but yeah. it's probably some hearty
yeah,
coffee.
Yeah, it's fine.
So $2 a week,
cafe americano.
I meant to work this out beforehand, like what that accounted to. So
$2 a week, $7.50.
Reasonable bread. So looks like reasonable bread.
Solid bread.
Solid bread. I like solid bread. I don't like liquid bread. Do you like liquid bread?
Gross.
Liquid bread. What is that?
Sounds like something you'd sell jabronis. For $100
jabroni
a serving.
Bread.
Jabroni it'll bread.
Build, it'll build your muscles. It'll give you the carbs you need. It's so, just fucking it's just solid. Take one unit bread. Of our special liquid bread, put it in the blender with fucking a gallon of water and just blend it up. Slurp it down. Slurp down some diluted bread water. Some chunky, freshly blended, yeasty, diluted bread water fills your muscles up. You're going to run a marathon.
I'm going to throw up.
Run two while you're at it.
So I think two a week.
Baguette slurry.
For real, yeah.
Okay.
What are you saying? Were you talking about money again?
I'm trying to figure out how this fucking thing.
Bitcoin.
I'm having math problems right now. So it's $2 a week at $7.50 is $2 is
$2 a week is the rent. Their wages are $7.50 a week.
Yeah, I know, and I'm getting a weird number. I'm doing my math all wrong.
Why are you? What are you trying to figure out? How much?
I'm trying to figure out
like, money. It was like 15 cents an hour.
I'm trying to figure out the most easiest thing that I learned. We all learned in math, which is percentages of how much 2%. I used to do this in my head all the time when I was waiting tables, like, and I somehow forgot. I think it's because I'm like trying to podcast.
When you were waiting tables, was it so you were calculating how much tip you were owed to compare it to how much tip you received?
I mean, compared
so
to
you
the
didn't know whether or not to be angry.
No, it was
to spit in the food.
No, it was to see if I was reaching my average for the night overall. It wasn't on a per table like judgment basis. I calculated and I was like, how am I doing tonight? Yeah. I tried not to take it out on the customer.
And you needed to make sure you had enough to feed your banana habit.
My banana habit.
Where you're just like eating all those bananas and get a bunch of bananas like fucking King Kong.
I had it.
like an actual bunch of bananas.
Were you like eating them like super green?
Yeah, super green. Well, I went on that broccoli diet for a little while.
For like a couple of days.
Do you still have those blog posts about the broccoli diet? Because that's to me, it's art.
There was some.
Oh,
blog.
Did I make a blog post about that? So what
Dan did years ago is he I think partly as performance art, although he won't admit that, partly as an actual dietary thing, he decided he was going to go on an all broccoli diet, and so he was documenting it on like a Live Journal blog. If I recall, I think it was on Live Journal, and there's like four entries, and the first two or three entries are like, this is great. I don't know. And then the last entry is like, I'm like shitting all day.
You called in sick from work. I think I'm dying. Like, Will came over and made like pasta with broccoli.
Which
in
was cheating because what he did is he
it
made.
It was cheating. He tricked you because you needed carbs.
Well, he made broccoli pasta. So it was that, you know, the noodles were all green. It was the noodles. It's made with like flour and everything else too. So it's kind
of. He was trying to save your life.
He made you green pasta and he saved your life. That was
all
the
right
point.
Well, you keep looking up whatever facts.
Well, I was gonna. I 2 divided by 7.5 is 20.2666. So 2 is 26% of 7.5. That doesn't sound right. That doesn't sound right at all.
I think it is. Okay.
That's right.
It sounds right to me.
Yeah, it is right. So 26% of his wages are going towards housing. What do they say? Do they say 30% of your wages, like before taxes?
I don't know. I think it changes.
That rule doesn't exist anymore. No, but like
now in America, it's like 70% or lower is your housing cost.
Yeah.
Oligarchy.
But there's an old school sort of like formula for
that. I think it was 30, 30, and 30 or some shit like that. I don't know. In terms of savings, housing, car, rent.
Yeah, 30%. Yeah, 30%. So it tracks. I was just trying to figure out if the vacation. What she's charging tracks with like
good
what
deal.
They're paying.
She's
so,
not charging it. It's somebody else.
Somebody else. But
maybe,
it's
maybe her friend owns it. I don't know.
But they're not getting ripped off.
No. Anyway, we gotta wrap things up here.
That
so
was quite a diversion.
Let's conclude our major points here. The ending line where he says, Kirk says, let's get the hell out of here.
Mm-hmm.
Did you get that one?
Let's get the hell out of here.
Yeah. So
let's get out of here.
Let's get the hell out of here. It's a very effective ending. It's an unusual ending for TOS, because TOS usually ended in the reset, like everything's back to normal, everything's good. This ending was really like, oh, there's some trauma here. This is, yeah. they went through some shit.
Oh, yeah.
And it hasn't been, it's not like that shit went away.
Because they came back and they were all like, hey, and they were like, we're not going to fucking talk about it.
And then, and the music was like kind of ponderous and sad and uneasy. Yeah. You know?
But it sometimes is hard for us to understand the context. What he did here was that was considered cursing. Say right. The way he said it, because they said hell on Star Trek in other contexts, but it was always like, come hell or high water or some very, you know, it was, that's not considered cursing or
context.
You know, that's considered, or comparing something to hell. This was something the studio fought really hard to try to not let them do. But luckily in the end, Roddenberry or whoever was able to convince them to let it go. The network was like, okay, we'll allow it. But they didn't want to let it because they consider this like the same thing as saying like, fuck off or something.
Yeah. It's interesting that after the whole Janet Jackson Super Bowl incident in 2001 or two or whatever, like all the radio stations and everyone tightened up their like security. I don't know what you call it. Their censorship.
Yeah.
But there was but used to be you weren't allowed to say certain words. Now that of course still existed, but there was there was this sort of unspoken rule where you're not supposed to talk about fluid coming from or inside your body onto or inside somebody else. Yeah. Like that concept was not allowed.
Oh my goodness.
And that became a thing. That wasn't a thing in the 90s. That became a thing after that incident.
That makes me want to come all over the place.
Yeah. Just like that. In my mouth.
Right in your mouth, sir.
And in my nose holes.
Yeah. That's why we put the little E on
nostril.
On the podcast episode. But there's a little E next to it.
But now would you be
explicit?
But then what about situations like when you said like, boy, that person, they really got a stick up their butt, you know, saying that they're, you know, they're anal retentive. Like, do you think that would be allowed? Who knows in this crazy world we live in?
I don't know.
It's not really an issue. Back in the 90s.
It's not an issue for podcasts.
Back in the 90s, it was unheard of for a pro wrestler to curse other than like, say, hell or damn. Even those were, in the 90s, that was considered hardcore cursing on a pro wrestling.
Yeah. And then later, was saying like, damn it, Jim, it was like, it was lighthearted, but it was still meant to position McCoy as a curmudgeon, sort of Navy curmudgeon, right? He's not, He wasn't super nice.
He's from Georgia.
Do you think that Cordrazine was just like surfacing a bunch of PTSD he's already had, like as a military doctor, just pushed away, and the Cordrazine like made it come all out?
Could be.
Well, I don't know how much.
I won't let you get me.
How much
PTSD
has there been? I mean, all right. There wasn't like a whole lot of wars.
So
there was like the Klingon.
Before we finish things up, we should talk about the Edith Keeler death thing, because that's sort of like the fulcrum of this whole thing.
And actually, there's that. It's kind of what I was going to mention real quick. This is a small point. When she runs into the street, and Spock goes, "No, Jim." Note that it's just Spock saying this, but listen,
no, Jim.
Sounds like two people are saying it.
It does. Sound
it's
like
just
it.
Spock, though. I looked because obviously McCoy wouldn't be saying it because he wants to save her too.
Spock's a super dude.
Kirk wouldn't be saying that to himself. No one else would know his name's Jim, and only his lips were moving. Interesting. But.
No, Jim!
There's obviously two voices going on there.
It's very strange.
It is very strange. It's truly...
Play it again.
It's truly strange.
No, Jim!
Oh, I thought
it's very strange.
Oh, okay, there we go.
There we go.
So the premise, we touched on this earlier, but the whole premise here is, again, a fascinating idea where you have to allow someone to die. It's sort of like a version of the trolley problem. That old philosophical tale, or philosophical conundrum, I should say.
It's just a crazy idea.
Of taking an action that causes someone to die, or withholding an action that causes someone to die. What's your culpability? What kind of guilt are you going to feel?
I would hold the action. That action, I'd hold it in my hand.
Oh, okay. I was like, are you going to do, you mean you'd do what Kirk did and not save her? He held the action.
Yeah, like that. Hold it. That's like some kind of like weird, isn't that like what, like Ayn Rand was all about or whatever? Is that even, I don't remember how to pronounce her name. It's Ayn Rand? Is it Ayn or Ayn?
I think it's Ayn.
Ayn Rand.
Isn't she all about like, you know, you're not supposed to help people because that's interfering or something?
It doesn't really matter.
I've never actually read the book. I've just heard people.
You don't need to buy, they're not very well written books. When you read the, because I, you know, I was all interested by this stuff when I was
in college. It's a reaction to like,
no, communism. But
you start reading it, you're like, oh man, this is like, this is not very clever.
Right. See, now that doesn't actually apply to this situation.
It's about self-esteem.
Christmas. But like, that's about something else entirely. It's not really the same. But generally speaking, if I'm presented with a decision where I'm damned if I do, I damned if I don't, I just don't, because like that's the best you can do, right? if you're lesson, fucked either way,
damned if you do.
Taken from the. I just you know, it's not. I don't know. There's probably not that much to discuss. I think plenty of other folks have made more interesting commentary on the death of Edith Keeler, but it would be foolish not to bring it up.
Edith Keeler must die.
But it is just an interesting idea from the perspective of peace-loving people who want to help people, and then thinking, okay, in order to help the most people, this person who's very nice, who is in everywhere characterized as one of the most wonderful people ever. It's not just that this an innocent person has to die. It's that she's the most awesome innocent person ever.
She's so nice that she's gonna make peace with the Nazis.
Yeah,
twice. She's so nice. She's gonna make peace with them twice.
Twice.
Yeah. So interesting. Interesting concept, and I think a difficult concept to wrestle with about the need, perhaps, for interim violence in order to arrive at a place of peace.
Right, that's a
but that's not a
60s shit.
Well, it's not a new question. I think that's an age old question. I'm sure before writing existed, people were pondering that.
Good cranial development.
That question, yeah, perhaps.
Totally, I buy it.
When you were talking about the bridge, I know we got to wrap up, but you were talking about the bridge, how it reminded you of Night Court. Yeah. I know it's the wrong city.
Not the Enterprise Bridge, the Brooklyn Bridge.
Yes, I know it's the wrong state and city, but whenever there was a shot of the side of an apartment building, and it reminded me of Seinfeld for some reason. It was just like a shot of like
Seinfeld's same city, dude, in New York. This is New York City.
Except
you're right. Sorry.
L.A., a lot of L.A. shots.
No, I kept hearing Brooklyn Bridge, I kept thinking like San Francisco for some reason. I don't know why I had San Francisco.
That's the Golden Gate Bridge.
Yeah, sorry.
Brooklyn is sort of a
same city. Okay, that was a dumb moment on my part. It's just the shot of like an upper floor apartment. Yeah. You don't see it in context. You just see the side of the building.
A similar shot.
And I kept thinking of Seinfeld. Yeah. Good. Seinfeld. Oh, and there was one. Speaking of Seinfeld, there was a sitcom moment, and that sitcom moment was when Bones came into the mission and she led him to the bed, and then right then Spock walks by with some like water or some shit.
serving some coffee.
Yeah, that was good. Just missed. Just now.
And final point to make about
the Brooklyn Bridge. It's not in San Francisco.
It is not. That is an important point too. No, I was going to refer to the fact that Robert Justman confirmed that this was intended, at least in part, to be a reference to the Vietnam War, which was underway at the time that this aired.
Oh.
And an early example of Star Trek referring to real life events using past events or a sci-fi analog, in this case, discussing the Second World War, or the lead up to the Second World War and references to the First World War.
Mm. I am my own beginning, my own ending.
That's like the Alpha and the Omega.
They don't make any.
That's like early in the Vietnam War.
But they don't make any direct analogies to the Vietnam War. It's not like MASH, which uses the Korean War as an almost direct stand-in for the Vietnam War. Yes. This is more just anti-war in general, or questioning the value of war, while at the same time having this interesting philosophical idea of, well, sometimes war is necessary. So
I am my own beginning, my own ending.
That's the I am the Alpha and the Omega that's in the Book of Revelation. Yeah. It's like the same
fuck
thing.
Fuck.
You pissed off Jesse.
A flop is a place to sleep.
All right.
We have a flop.
Mr. Goofy sounds over here.
We have a flop.
All right. Well, that's it for
us.
That was a good show. Good
a flop
episode.
Is a place to sleep.
next week, we decided we're going to forego Dan's algorithm for a week because we thought it might be fun for no particular reason.
For no reason.
To discuss the two-part Voyager episode, season 4 of Voyager. I think it's episodes 18 and 19. The Killing Game.
Who's to say when the exact time will come?
Well, it will be next week, next Monday at midnight.
Really?
Yeah, 12 a.m. Monday Eastern Time is when you'll hear that discussion.
Can you change the speed at which yesterday passes?
You better fuck off.
Shut up.
Shut up. That's a keeper right there.
Shut up.
Shut up. Shut up, yo.
Shut up. Shut up.
I'm not right. joking, Lee.
So next week's a killing game. Yeah, killing game. Voyager.
I'm not joking, Lee.
Okay.
Jesse said it, so I had to play it.
No, it's fine. That's the end of this week. Next week, killing game. Oh, yeah. Social media. At It's Got Star Trek, Blue Sky,
Blue
and Threads, Blue and Ski. Instagram, and all that. You can find us on Facebook. YouTube, do us a favor. You don't have to listen to us on YouTube. Tons of you are listening to us on YouTube, but you don't have to. But it would be awesome if you go subscribe. Then you can just have it. We won't bother you. Nothing's going to happen if you subscribe, but you'll get notified. But it also like makes us look cooler if we have more YouTube subscribers.
You'll be sorry.
So go subscribe to us on YouTube. There's tons already there.
We've
so
got a special page.
Yeah, maybe we'll toss out some special YouTube stuff.
Why not?
Oh, don't we have a Patreon?
We do have a Patreon. Patreon.com/ItScottStarTrek. A lot of fun stuff there. More coming all the time, although we've been a little delinquent
bonus
on that.
But
we'll be adding stuff, more bonus material.
Rather barbaric period in your American history.
Okay, so yeah, I think we did all our end bits, so we will talk to you again about this time next week. Bye-bye!
Time has resumed its shape. All is as it was before.
Kirk out.
Kirk out. I always think of Kirk and Hat.
I know, me too.
I think I'm going to like this century. Simple, easier to manage. We're not going to have any difficulty explaining.
Well?
You're a police officer. I recognize the traditional accoutrements.
He was saying you'll have no trouble explaining it.
My friend is obviously Chinese. I see you've noticed the ears. They're actually easy to explain.
Perhaps the unfortunate accident I had as a child.
The unfortunate accident he had as a child. He caught his head in a mechanical rice picker. But fortunately, there was an American missionary living close by who was actually a skilled plastic surgeon in civilian life.
All right, all right. Drop those bundles and put your hands on that wall there. Come on.